This is Tales of Northern Michigan's Past with Christopher Struble, and this is part three of his conversation with Mark and Sue Bevins and the Thunder Bay Inn.
Well, it is. It's something that's what this this podcast celebrates is the special, the environmental, the historical aspects of Northern Michigan. It's just we have a very unique place up here.
And, I don't know if it's appropriate, but I would like to make a little commercial about our Environmental Education Center.
Yeah, sure, please.
Yeah, so our DBA here at the Thunder Bay Inn is called Historic Thunder Bay Inn for good cause or good reason. We have created a nonprofit, community-based, called Friends of the Historic Thunder Bay Inn. And the sole purpose is to provide benefits and goodwill to all the good folks of Marquette County, especially veterans, especially seniors. Recently, we were awarded an MDARD grant to build what we call Environmental Education Center. So we have hired a graduate student. She just graduated from Northern with an MBA with an undergrad in outdoor rec. We've written 17 outdoor rec activities that include ecology, geology, a little bit of challenge, and a little bit of local horticulture. And we are developing those. They're actually developed, and we're beta testing them this fall. And we built a 40-by-80 building that we call the Recreational Lending Library, at least half of it. And what that means is we will provide equipment for the 17 outdoor activities. We will guide with important safety protocols. And our wilderness classroom is the 1,200 square miles between Big Bay, Lawrence, and 41 and the Superior Coast. That'll start up next year. And then, in addition, local folks can buy a library card and with a small maintenance fee, and that enables them to check out equipment. So a young kid wants to go snowshoeing or backpacking or bird watching or geocaching. He'll be able to come here, check out the equipment at no cost, which we think is real important to the community. And then the other half of the building is what we call local horticulture education, emphasis on sustenance training, harvest, and farmers market that will be there. And so we have that building roughed in. She'll be done by the spring, and next year we expect to be up and running full steam.
How will people interested contact you about that that program and these events that you're planning?
Yeah, so we haven't listed the itineraries yet, and I'll just give you an example. One, there's a very famous McCormick Track here, wilderness site, and that's a two-day camping and hiking. It's as rich as it gets. But when available through the Friends of the Historic Thunder Bay Inn tab on our website, which is historicthunderbayinn.com, that will get populated, okay? Or they can call the inn, but right now we don't expect that to happen until this winter, probably December or January that'll get populated. But at that point, though, it'll be electronic online, okay?
Yeah, you can hear me right now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
We have a ringing phone. We're waiting for it to end right now, so it didn't bother the last section there. Yeah, he's going to take the call real quick. So there he goes. Now he's done. Did we get him clean and clear on how to talk? How to reach their facility?
You'll be able to get that information online, but we'll distribute, okay, and we'll start. We work with Bennett Marketing here, Bennett Media in Marquette, and that'll all get populated as we go.
Well, I mean, you're doing great things up there. You guys just finished up with a blues fest too. How did that go?
We did, and I got to tell you, our nonprofit Friends of the Historic Thunder Bay Inn has been hosting 4 blues festivals here. It was just one dayers, and the Marquette Area Blues Society had just completed a 20-year run on Labor Day at the Lower Harbor, giant venue, and they announced last year that they were retiring. So we contacted them and said, look, our 5th year, we always said we wanted to build a little bit bigger venue. So this year they partnered with us after a series of meetings, and we had 6 acts, including Buckwheat Jr. Zydeco, which everybody got to enjoy last Friday. And Saturday was great. We expect in the future maybe to consider a social district, but we're going to work with the township board and all the local businesses and see if that's the right thing to do. We think it is. And we'll see how that goes. Okay.
Yeah. Good luck with that. What are the plans for the Brunswick remaining structures?
You mean over at the mill?
Yeah.
Or?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Your son owns that property.
Yeah. All the Brunswick structures are gone. The main post and beam building that Henry Ford revised in 1943 burnt down in 1953, when they were cutting all the steel out of there. So what remains now is a 3-story brick and mortar, what I call factory floor, that's 50 by 150, and then a 6-story building, brick and mortar attached, that was where all the wood chip silos were and work rooms. And then, of course, the front of the building had the generators that's been converted to a house or living quarters. So Josh is exploring what he would like to do there. Lots of people have come to him and said, great place for a distillery. Some people say great place for a brewery.
Yep. Those are the first two that jumped to mind.
Yeah, but he's taking his time. Josh works up at the mine and he's taking his time and wants to do the right thing. And that includes getting together with the local government here and making sure that whatever he does going forward, it's conducive with the master plan here, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Some of that master plan I got to add is, and I don't mean this in a negative way, not to turn this into a Traverse City.
Yeah, yeah.
California used to be the greatest state in the union, and it attracted so many people that it kind of allows you to stumble. And again, I don't want to sound critical. I'm not politically correct kind of person. Hey, I do want to mention too, the idea of the EEC is, as opposed to, how do I want to say this? I'm going to say it correctly. The idea of the EEC is to invite people here, teach them great wilderness concepts and all that is natural, both in hiking and kayaking and a lot of great outdoor wilderness experiences and horticulture. And to, most importantly, teach them to honor and respect the culture of the people that choose to live here. They subscribe and value this area tremendously. And we think if we invite people here, teach them to honor and respect it, and then take that home and apply it to their lives, I think that we can all head closer to all that's natural, or just have more and more appreciation. I mean, I've spent my whole life cultivating that value, thanks to my father, et cetera, and a lot of great people around here. So we think by appreciating our natural environment, maybe we can all steer the ship towards something that is, I don't know, environmentally friendly. Okay.
Well, hopefully appreciation will encourage preservation, right?
There you go. And thank you for that input. And I think that the EEC, if it's truly there reflecting the culture and teaching people to honor and respect the folks that live here, that you just got to love it, man, as opposed to there have been towns, and again, we won't mention any names, that too many people come because they hear of the wonderfulness, and in the process, at no one's fault, the culture gets changed.
Sure, it does. The joke is, you know, when you move up here, just don't tell anybody else, you know. I moved up here, and I was like, I don't want anybody else moving up. This is such a special place.
Yeah, you can move up, but just play the cultural role. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you bring, I don't want to say if you bring your city norms here, it changes it, but it really does. I mean, Marquette is starting to bust at the seams.
Yeah.
And there's pros and cons. The economy, employment, is good. But the wilderness is pristine up here. And once it's gone, it's gone. You know what I mean?
That's it. It really is. And that's like one of the last frontiers when you get that far north up there.
It feels like it. It does. It feels like it. And we're just, the rest of my natural life, I'm going to help preserve it best I can. And we thought the EEC was the best way to do it.
That's a hell of a mission. It's a good, it's a great, 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 great cause.
And it adds to the ambiance and the destination, right?
Sure.
Destination. You got it. It contributes to the destination. There you go. What else? Questions?
Yeah. Well, just basically, just the last questions about the inn. What are your months of operation?
We're open this year. We stayed open year round. Normally we were off in April, but this year we stayed open. Typically our hours right now, Monday is our day off. Tuesday we go from 4 to 8 or 9, depending on the traffic. And Wednesday through Sunday, 4 to 9, 8 or 9, same thing. Usually on the weekends a little longer. And the rooms are always available.
What are the rates? I mean, again, it's very, very comfortable accommodations. It's, you know, it's not what you think about when you think about an inn that's that old. I'm dying to come up and stay. Just get a couple days off here. What are the general rates?
Yeah, the rates are $130 for what we call a standard 1940s room that had a sink in it. And if you had any business, if you know what I mean, you went down to the common rooms, up to a couple $100 for a Jack and Jill suite. The Ford room, I think, is a couple hundred. So 7 of the rooms have been converted over time to include a shower in a closet space. Most rooms, other than 2, maybe 3, don't have a water closet. We know what that is.
Mm-hmm.
So it varies. $130 to, I think one room is actually $250, the double suite. That's actually 2 rooms with a shared bathroom.
Yeah, I get a couple of days off here. I may make a trip up there.
Yeah, we got a lot to do just from this blues festival.
I can imagine. Pretty good turnout.
Yeah, it was great turnout, great bands. And it's our first year being mentored by a team of people that really know what they're doing based on their experience, right?
Yeah, we just had Jim Gillespie from Blissfest on our last episode. Jim's been organizing that for, I think, like 25 years or 30 years or something, the Blissfest 3-day festival.
Where at?
That's in Bliss, Michigan, so like by Harbor Springs.
It's okay.
It's turned into a huge Well, they've got camping, and they own buildings and farms and property now, and it's transformed quite a bit. I'll send you the links to these episodes too for you.
Yeah, and we expect, and I didn't want to say that on the air, but we expect to develop into a 3-day blues festival where we have a social district and we have bands playing, clinics at 6 locations, and then some headliners.
Nice.
You know, and a couple main stages. Yeah, it'd be fun.
And good underwriting for that as far as financing and everything?
Sponsorships.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That was something we learned this year from, again, the Blues Society. They said, so you got your sponsors lined up? We said, what's a sponsor? We didn't know. We were just doing mom and pop little stuff. But I believe we're on the right track, and we confide in them based on their experience to mentor us. There is one other thing I wanted to mention.
Sure. He's going to mention something else right now, so. Okay, go ahead.
When you're ready, good.
Yep, we're good.
So I mentioned that I have this newfound vocation for local history here that is real, and I tell people I don't believe in ghosts, but I believe I'm possessed because things are occurring over my pay grade to understand and are lining up as if they were meant to be.
Well, things don't happen like this. These are things that happen.
Yeah, so we're following that. And one big, big project, in addition to a lot of stuff we've listed, is creating a Ford Motor Company Northern Michigan Operations Coalition. What I mean by that is Alberta, Pequamining, Iron Mountain, Big Bay. They didn't quite get Munising done, but there's 6 Northern Michigan operations that Henry had created, and we would like to create a coalition for 2 reasons. One, to pull the communities together, and I'm already working through the Berga County Historic Society on the Alberta Mill in their committee, but and I agreed to get involved if they would agree to help form this coalition. So nevertheless, we create a coalition, and then we register that on the national registry. And I think that can help us down the road leverage restoration grants, et cetera. It would be a bigger entity.
Would there be any potential of joining, you know, the Ford Foundation as far as like you know, Greenfield Village and all the other historic estates that they fund and maintain? Would there be any?
Well, so we've communicated to the foundation. We don't have a formal coalition written up yet. We're working with a couple writers and putting that together. I did send Bill Ford a email and ask him to get together with us, and I don't know if that ever reaches him or not, but my request would be, hey, this is sensitive to the family. We want to make sure any gray areas can be identified, and we want to represent them formally and properly. We think most importantly, it would be very meaningful to Henry Ford himself to see these coalitions or this coalition include all of the facilities that he loved put together and registered on a national registry. That could lead to bigger magnitude grant opportunities just for the purpose of restoring as well as pulling the communities together. I think the western half of the UP, as I've alluded to, is a very special place. And we look forward to working together. I am on the Berga County Historic Society Committee to restore the Alberta Mill. I got involved in that with the idea, and they all know this, that they would participate in the coalition. So that's our big high level Henry Ford history endeavor, and that'll take its course as we go down the road.
Well, it sounds like things are moving forward one way or another with all help and the energy you're using to promote this. So you've taken over quite an undertaking, and it's a very noble cause. As far as the inn itself, you used a word a minute ago, and I got to throw this in there because we do a lot on this. You said the word ghost. You showed us one of the rooms in the hotel that seems to get a little bit of activity. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, okay, but I'll preface that I don't believe in ghosts, or okay, at least the ability to channel, okay?
Uh-huh.
So, and when I first got here, first of all, I've never been in hospitality, and or owned a bar in the restaurant. So when I got here, I needed to find out if there were ghosts. So I did what every ghost hunter would do. I grabbed a six pack of Bud Light. I went down in the cold room at 2 a.m, turned all the lights off, and I sat there and drank all six of those beers and invited every time I cracked one open for any or everything to come and visit. Unfortunately, I may be too sensitive to channel. Like I said, I don't want to say there's not ghosts. Mm-hmm. But to get back to your question, many people have come in here that claim that they have channeled to the afterworld. And I can tell you, a real testimony is I've observed the majority of them stop in front of room 212.
Mm-hmm. And
feel something.
And you even decorated that kind of accordingly to some of the reports you've had. Is that correct?
Yeah, and there was a couple of reasons. That room we altered a little bit, but we've had gals come here, paranormal folks, that set up equipment, and they suggest there's activity. But again, over my pay grade to understand. One lady, Kathy Condor, wrote a book, and she went around and studied paranormal activity and also the cuisine of the places that she was around. So that's kind of an interesting twist. And her book's available. That's Kathy Condor.
Okay.
She's from your area, as a matter of fact.
Nice, nice. Some of the Volker family resides in Petoskey also.
Very, very cool. So I don't know. To answer your question, are there ghosts here? I'm not going to say there are. I already told you that whether I can channel or not, I know I'm possessed in that something is using me as a medium to bring all this back to life and preserve it.
Yeah, you are. You're kind of being used as a conduit to preserve and record and document the history of Big Bay, and that's something we thank you very much for. It's been my pleasure to have you today. Mark Bevins, owner of the Thunder Bay Resort in Big Bay, Michigan. Please feel free to contact him. Mark, you want to share your phone number or your website?
And by the way, we'd be remiss if we didn't say Mark and Sue. Because she does the lion's share of the work.
That's correct. I did omit that.
Right on. And you can reach our website at historicthunderbayinn.com. And our phone number is 906-345-9220.
Thank you very much for having taken the time to speak with us today, and you'll be seeing me in Big Bay again very soon. And we wish the best of luck to you in your endeavors, and it's a great thing that you're doing up there.
Thank you, sir, and I appreciate your time, Chris. Okay?
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Tales of Northern Michigan's Past with Christopher Struble, and a special thank you to Mark and Sue Bevins of the Thunder Bay Inn. Chris will be coming up with more adventures for Tales of Northern Michigan's Past, so stay tuned to the Tales of Northern Michigan's Past Facebook page. We'll see you next time.